WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The new film Backbeat is about the early years of the Beatles. It's not a documentary, but it ain't Beatlemania either. In fact, musicians from Sonic Youth, REM, Soul Asylum, and Nirvana play the music on the soundtrack.
Wait!
My guest is the co-writer and director of Backbeat, Ian Sofley. Film critic Owen Gleiberman describes Backbeat as a loving reenactment of the years before the Beatles were stars, when they were just a rough-and-tumble bar band playing hard-rocking cover versions of Good Golly Miss Molly in the grimy Rathskellers of Hamburg, Germany. The central characters are John Lennon and his buddy, artist Stuart Sutcliffe, who was the Beatles' first bass player back when there were five members of the band. Sutcliffe died of a brain hemorrhage just as the Beatles were becoming famous. He had already left the band to go back to painting. In this early scene from the film, Lennon is trying to convince Sutcliffe to give up his promising painting career to play rock and roll. Sutcliffe is worried about what his mentor will think.
I know what Arthur's gonna say. He's gonna say, I gave you a chance. I put a brush in your hand. Went out on a limb for you, and you're going to toss it away to go and play bass in John Lennon's skiffle band.
It's not a skiffle band.
He's going to say...
It's a rock and roll band.
I open the doors for
it's
you.
It's not my band.
Yeah, that's what he'll say.
It's a group. We're a group. I like Arthur. You know, he's all right. But he thinks art's something you got to hang on the wall in a pool of light. It's a disease with him. He thinks it's all about Van Gogh.
Nothing wrong with Van Gogh.
Oh, no, I had away with Van Gogh.
Did you?
Bumped into him the other night in the grapes.
Yeah?
Yeah. St. Vincent May, where did it all go wrong? You know what he said? He didn't mean to tell you this.
Nah, what'd he say?
He said, if I could do it all again, I'd be up there shaking me bum doing blue suede shoes.
How did you find this Stu Sutcliffe story?
Well, it was at that time that I, when I was actively looking and kind of playing around with some ideas, that I was in a bookshop flicking through a load of music books, and I came across one photograph in particular, a very beautiful self-portrait that Astrid Kircher took. And I was just immediately struck by this photograph. It looked as though this woman not only was very beautiful, very, very attractive, with short, cropped blonde hair, looking very directly into the camera, but she had taken the photograph herself, and it was beautifully composed. It had an incredible timeless quality about it, as if it could have appeared in the pages of a fashion or style magazine today. And so I flicked through to the index and looked up her name and kind of went through other books and saw her photographs she'd taken of Stuart and photographs she'd taken of the Beatles when they were still really kids in Hamburg. And the characters that I saw in these photographs just kind of jumped off the page, and I knew that there was a great film here.
Astrid Kircher, who was Stu Sutcliffe's lover and also a German photographer who took fantastic early pictures of the Beatles, she's still alive. Did she help you with the movie?
Yeah, I think one of the most direct influences that Astrid had on the film was really just in allowing me and later on the actors to really get into her, to sort of travel back in time with her, really, by having a relationship with that person. I think I and certainly the actors felt drawn into that world, so that we weren't looking at it from the outside, but she was generous enough to sort of share her memories, but also to become friends with us. And so that we were getting to know the essence of the people. It wasn't so much a kind of list of chronological facts that I got from Astrid, although I did get a lot of that. What was really powerful to me and very inspirational was when I finally got the funds together to be able to contract her, I went to stay with her and Klaus Voormann in a North German farmhouse and spent many days doing taped interviews with her, talking late into the night, looking through boxes of letters and documents of time with Stuart, and just talking about scenes, going back to incidences again and again and looking at them from a different angle. And I really felt that I was being drawn back and drawn into that relationship.
Are there parts of the Beatles story that you think come into focus when you examine the Beatles through the life of Stu Sutcliffe?
Yeah, I think one of the things that interested me when I realized that the three characters, Astrid, Stuart, and John, were fascinating characters for a movie, was that through their relationship, not only do we see a universal love story, if you like, but we see a story about people making decisions about what they're going to do with their lives and what they have to give up in terms of relationships to sometimes get what they want. But also, it's as if the time in Hamburg is like a microcosm of a lot of the things that happened later. We see a coming together of two worlds, of art and rock and roll, Liverpool and Hamburg, kind of male and female impulses.
And the pop and the avant-garde.
And the pop and the avant-garde. But I think what's interesting about the world at that time in Hamburg is that Stuart Sutcliffe's decision, the choice that he has to make between his best friend John Lennon and his lover Astrid Kirke, is also the decision between playing in a rock and roll band and being an artist. And what we see by the end of the film is a kind of synthesis, a coming together of these two worlds in the relationship of Stuart and Astrid. And that relationship having a very big influence on John and through John the Beatles, and eventually the whole kind of themes and preoccupations of 60s popular culture. I mean, I think it's not going too far to say that you can actually trace this kind of mixture of European art school and an American rock and roll culture as being in many ways the defining quality of the Beatles in terms of what made them different to other rock and roll bands.
My guest is Ian Sofley, co-writer and director of the new film Backbeat, about the early days of the Beatles. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ian Sofley, director of the new film Backbeat. Your movie Backbeat takes place just before the Beatles' first recording session. Even though the Beatles at the time were already performing Lennon-McCartney songs, you don't use any of those songs in the movie. Did you have trouble buying the rights to those songs? Were the rights too expensive?
No, that's not the way around that things happen. And I think, the whole idea about using the songs that we used, there was a very important creative reason, which I've talked about a bit, which is the idea of this band doing covers of other people's songs, of their heroes' songs, puts us in their shoes more. It makes us feel that they're like us. That these are ordinary guys who've got their rock and roll heroes. If the only songs or the majority of songs that we heard them do were Beatles songs, I think it would be like us looking up at them on a pedestal. And that this is, in a way, a kind of an anti-history, to the extent that it's a history at all. It's seeing... One of the things that struck me about the idea was that this was a way of seeing a story that people have an enormous kind of preconceptions about, and kind of turning them upside down, looking at them from the other point of view, seeing the Beatles as the bad boys in the way that everybody thought the Rolling Stones were, and before they became kind of perhaps over-moulded in the early days, as they were in the early days of their career.
Why don't I play something from the soundtrack that's been released along with the film? Why don't we hear Good Golly, Miss Molly? Do you want to say anything about this performance?
Good Golly, Miss Molly is the first song that the guys do in the Kaiserkeller, the club that they play in Hamburg. In the movie, we see them coming on stage to a very unwelcoming audience. And it's really a kind of... either they've got to run away or they've got to stand and fight, in a way. And they fight through this song. They just kind of blast it out to the people in the club, demanding to be listened to.
Let's hear it. From the soundtrack recording of the film Backbeat, and my guest Ian Softley is the co-writer and the director of the film. If you wanted the music in the film to be true to the energy of the early Beatles music, what did you want the visual look of the film to be like?
I wanted the film to be true to the world seen through the eyes of these artists. I wanted it to feel as if we were there now, to a certain extent, but I also wanted to, I wanted the style and the look to be dictated by what they were experiencing, what it would have looked like through their eyes. So at times when they're going to Astrid's apartment and some of the Hamburg art scene bars, there's a kind of sense in which that's heightened and stylized, as if their senses are sort of experiencing the colors and the light and shade more vividly. And I think also there's a sense in which the look of the film reflects both the use of kind of rich colors in Stuart's paintings, particularly blacks and reds, and also we tried to reflect the composition and use of light and shade, strong light and shade, in Astrid's photographs. Her photographs are very simple, graphic, strong compositions that have a kind of an authentic feel, a kind of real personality, but at the same time, there's an aesthetic there as well.
From the way you tell the story in the film, Astrid Kirko, the photographer, had an influence on the Beatles' visual style. And in fact, she may be responsible for the Beatles' haircut.
Astrid had a very big influence on the Beatles' look in a number of ways. I mean, specifically, she cut Stuart's hair so that Stuart looked like her, which became the way that the Beatles themselves cut the hair afterwards, and known as the mop top. She also gave them a lot of other ideas about clothes. I mean, in general, she would kind of adapt and alter clothes, cut the collars off jackets and things, and their collarless jackets and their high-heeled Cuban-heeled flamenco boots can be seen as something that Astrid first dressed Stuart in, that was then taken on by the others. I think the way that she photographed them was a very big influence, and kind of opened their eyes to the power of the way they looked was going to be a very important part of what they did. In those early photographs in the Hamburg locations, where she arranges them, making sure that they're not smiling, that there's a kind of dignity, a sort of relationship between the bodies in the photograph, almost as if she's a sculptor arranging her models. Somehow, it's not just the first time that anybody had photographed the Beatles in that way. It's, I think, the first time a rock and roll band had been photographed in that way, dignifying them with a kind of a presence which suggested that they were going to have a power and an influence beyond merely playing music in a club on a Saturday night.
Yeah, her photographs weren't your typical rock and roll idol photographs with a singer looking dreamily into the character. These were poses with a lot of attitude, where maybe they'd each be standing there with their instrument, kind of posed at interesting angles, maybe on a bridge or something. So, yeah, it had this real sculptural, kind of hard-edge look to it.
And I think this idea and this acceptance of how the visual arts in particular, but all art, was in a way like a metaphor for the sort of the cultural change that was happening at the time, was something that Astrid showed them, because she lived her art. And when she and Stuart were lovers, I mean, the divisions between their love and their art was very blurred. And I think in many ways one can see echoes in the relationships that some of these guys had later, which reflect the sort of relationship that Stuart and Astrid had, which was an odd relationship for the time when, you know, men were still supposed to be macho, even rock and rollers. And here was Stuart, in a way, kind of challenging sexual stereotypes by agreeing to be the model to his girlfriend, the artist, allowing her to cut his hair so that he looked like her, pulling on her tight leather trousers, a kind of sexual ambivalence and androgyny that was a very important theme in the whole of the 60s culture, the breaking down of sexual stereotypes. Even men growing their hair was considered a kind of an effeminate thing to do at that time. And I think that that's one of the themes that interested me, that it's here are these people at a time when all of these things are going around in their minds because of the age that they are, trying to work out their identity, not just as artists, but as people.
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thanks very much.
Ian Sofley is director of the new film, Backbeat. This is Fresh Air.